Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter.
The NCAA is trying to push back on the out-of-control NIL recruiting this offseason, but does the organization have any power? That's a little bit of football recruiting landscape, some hoops, and more. We'll cover it all here on the Golden Black Radio podcast. Kyle Charters with Brian Neuwirth. Brian, let's jump in there with the NCAA trying to push back a little bit this week on booster-related, basically pay-for-play recruiting that we have seen disguised as the NIL this offseason. You know, that's nice and all, and, you know, glad the NCAA is doing something. Perhaps it should have tried to do this, you know, a while ago. But will we actually see any kind of result from that?
Well, basically what all of this, all these anonymously sourced warnings are, that came out last week, are essentially reminders that a lot of people, you know, jumped right from this being name, image, and likeness to being overt violations of longstanding, you know, NCAA recruiting rules, which still stand.
Yeah.
You know, there were no NIL rules basically laid out. There were two broad guidelines, which have also been trampled all over, but there were no hard rules. There was nothing that the NCAA could enforce. But what this was this week was the NCAA, I guess, reminding people / threatening people about the fact that if you're a booster and you're talking directly to recruits and you're giving them money for dubious, you know, tasks, that's a violation of NCAA rules that have stood for, you know, generations, and egregious violations of NCAA rules, and something that something that the NCAA can enforce, can legislate, can you know, sanction people for, theoretically. I mean, obviously theoretically, everything
yeah.
with the NCAA is theoretical more than it is real. But so that's what that was. And it was a necessary step, and it was a step that should have occurred months ago. You know, it's funny. I wrote something last week about, you know, how anybody could have seen this coming. And when I said anybody could have seen this coming, I wasn't talking about 3 years ago when this all came to bear. And it was a beyond reasonable assumption to think that there were going to be rules in place. Of course, a year ago at this time, it became evident that there was not going to be rules, or the NCAA didn't put rules in place. So that's how this thing got to where it got. And now it's going to be a lot more difficult to rein this in probably than it would have been to just simply put in some guardrails in the first place and go from there. But the NCAA has been so litigation-minded that it didn't do anything with this. And,
yeah,
you know, the Alston ruling, I think, completely got between their collective ears and compelled them to simply just follow your state laws. That's all we can do. And
yeah.
That's how this got to where it got. Obviously, this is simply a measure, an off-the-record measure to try to rein it back in a little bit. But we'll see what happens, because I don't think the guy at Miami is going to stop because the NCAA is saying stuff off the record. I think the Miami guy is going to ramp it up even further to try to bait the NCAA into coming at him so he can sue them.
Yeah, I think that decision sort of made a lot of people feel like it was just open season. I mean, if you read the story in the Athletic today, I don't remember the one guy's name, but he says something to the effect of you can't just stop one group of people, boosters, from doing this just because they're boosters.
Well,
you know, and so their opinion is that the NCAA doesn't really have any ability to stop them at this point. And, you know, whether it does or not, the effect might be that, they just, like the Miami guys, say, yeah, we're not going to listen to you.
Well, the NCAA, I mean, it has been written NCAA rule for since the dawn of time that people acting on behalf of the university cannot give recruits money. And, you know, that's where this thing with these collectives had to go. I mean, this is – and it is blatant booster activity. And that was the first thing they needed to get rid of. They need to push those people underground. I think, as I wrote this morning, what the last couple months have really suggested to us is that the teams – the schools, the programs that have been most effective and most organized and most aggressive, and again, consequently most effective, are the ones that were probably doing this unofficially anyway in the first place, and finding ways to get money to people, to athletes, and they need to push those people back underground. You're not going to stop them all. You're not going to stop them altogether. But you need to at least not empower them by sort of kind of making them street legal. What you need to do is just make what they're doing again illegal. And that's – it was always illegal because they're boosters and they're giving people money. It just so happens they had this kind of loophole now that they could pretend gave them legitimacy, which it I guess did to a certain extent, but they trampled all over the legitimate part of it right away when they just started overtly buying players out in the open too. That's what I've said many times before. I can't believe how public people are being about this. Like, I can't believe the people at Illinois and, you know, the people at Indiana and the people at Texas are like being quoted in newspapers. Like, what are you guys doing? At least keep your freaking heads down, you know, and don't invite this. But that's the nature of boosters, is never underestimate a wealthy individual's desire to buy clout sometimes. And that's what they're doing. And, you know, sometimes it isn't about the product on the floor. It's about the – it's about the story to tell at the cocktail party. And, you know, it's, you got to push those people back underground. And again, it's going to be a lot harder to rein it in now than it would have been a year ago to just say, hey guys, just for a reminder, all the stuff that was illegal for the last 75 years or however long it's been since it hasn't been 75 years because this stuff used to be legal. Everything that's been illegal for the last 40 years, hey, that's still illegal. So watch yourself. But you know how it goes. They just allowed this to become a mess. And, anything they can do now to rein it back in is probably going to be met with some resistance here.
Yeah, I just don't think that the people doing this at Texas or Miami or wherever else, or, you know, or an organization that represents 80 athletes everywhere and has gotten deals for them, I just don't think that they believe that the NCAA really has any teeth, that long-standing 40 years of you can't do this really actually does exist still. That, like, in the eyes of the law now, you know, based, I think, some on that case that you mentioned and based somewhat on what Brett Kavanaugh wrote in his opinion on that case, that there just isn't any rules, that the NCAA really can't even enforce that. I think that's the booster's opinion, at least. So this can't enforce it.
I haven't read the Supreme Court opinion yet. I probably should have a long time ago. But, you know, I've kind of wondered, and I know California's law and some other state laws say there's no real limit on this, but at least the Supreme Court ruling in the Alston case said that the NCAA cannot limit an athlete's earnings that are tied to education. And I think that would be an important thing to kind of mete out. Like,
yeah,
if Nigel Pack's making $400,000 a year to associate his name with some business, is that tied to education? Is the fact that that's tied to him playing basketball at the University of Miami, which in itself is against the guidelines that were laid out by the NCAA, not that that matters, because those are guidelines and not rules. If he's getting that opportunity because he's going to play basketball at Miami, is that quote unquote tied to education? You know,
yeah.
What I've said all along here is that for this to not be an NCAA recruiting violation and not just simply a violation of NIL rules that don't exist, there's got to be some kind of fair market value component to this. The example I keep using over and over again is, since the dawn of time, since this stuff started being really regulated, since it became illegal for boosters to pay athletes, whenever that was, the 60s or whatever, the 70s, you couldn't go get a job and have them pay you $1,000 an hour to work that job.
Right.
And if Nigel Pack is making more on a one-year licensing deal to play basketball at the University of Miami than, like, Klay Thompson probably would if he associated his name with some sort of – that was a really random example I just came up with, but I'm sitting here thinking of a relatively prominent NBA player whose market might be in the vicinity of $400,000 a year. I don't know, Jimmy Butler. How about that? That's not that. There's no planet in which Nigel Pack, who's not even an All-American, who has no NBA
yeah.
draft, you know, cachet, who's not a household name outside of the typical, you know, college basketball junkie. There's no planet in which that is fair market value. There's no reality in which that's fair market value. And that, consequently, is the exact same thing as a college basketball player going to work at a booster-friendly restaurant in their market and getting paid $1,000 an hour for a job that everyone else makes $15 an hour. That's an NCAA violation. That in itself is an NCAA violation. Again, another thing that had to be put in place on the front end of this, where it just had to be that you cannot pay an athlete an egregiously exorbitant amount for work that does not, that or some sort of role or whatever that does not justify the numbers involved. But again, you don't have that. What you do have is your longstanding rule book. And as I said before, it took about 8 seconds here in the last year for people to jump from just taking liberties with the spirit of name, image, and likeness to just blatantly breaking, you know, longstanding NCAA recruiting rules.
Here's what agents, boosters, what have you, are lawyers, whatever, are sort of pinning their thought process on, according to the story this morning in The Athletic, which is a pretty good story here. Just quoting Brett Kavanaugh, who wrote the concurring opinion in the Alston decision. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. So that basically is what they're, according
correct.
To the story at least, what they are sort of pinning their whole decision making on, if you are a booster, and that, you know, they're just saying, hey, look, you know, well, it's not a binding like legal deal. What Kavanaugh wrote, it's his opinion. That they can get away with anything at this point because the whole industry is not legal.
Yeah.
That's just their point of view.
That was the case forever. And now it's pretty funny that, you know, people
yeah.
are going to the federal government on behalf of the NCAA on behalf of the NCAA basically saying, hey, yeah, you know, we know the Supreme Court just shot us down 9-0 for being in violation of antitrust issues. But can you help us out here and help us survive? Yeah. Like, what are we doing here? This isn't the government's problem anymore. This is the NCAA's problem. What the NCAA needed to be doing, as I have been ranting and raving about for years now, was they needed to accept and they needed to get out in front of, you know, the inevitable, and they needed to be lobbying Congress for an antitrust exemption years and years and years ago, like when they were spending all their money fighting this instead of, like, trying to be proactive about it or understanding, hey, this is where things are going. We better be ready for it. We better, you know, make sure we can still subsist when all of this happens. There were points in time where had you just, like, done something, you know, for the athletes to be able to, you know, to be able to profit off their names, image, and likeness. Names, images, and likenesses. That would have been, you would have been the conquering hero, you know? It would have been the rare PR win for the NCAA. Instead, what they ended up doing was, all right, nobody's asking for transfer reform, but we're just going to do that. Because it's something that we're offering up as a token gesture for the athletes instead of, you know, giving them money. So now you've got the transfer brouhaha now too, that no one was asking for. you know, it's just, it is what it is at this point. They have made a complete mess of this by not being proactive, by fighting this instead of accepting it. And here we are.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll try to spin this into a little bit of, you know, actual, like, recruiting. We'll try to do that coming up next on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Brahm Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Experience unparalleled comfort, service, and cuisine at the Whitaker Inn. This Midwestern oasis is perfect for a relaxing staycation or weekend getaway. Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn.
Designing and building since 1968, T&W has changed the way people think about construction. T&W's three-stage approach to designing and building is unmatched throughout the construction industry. Learn more about T&W's people, passion, and projects at twdesignbuild.com.
On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, Industrial and Classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Kyle here with Brian. We'll talk a little bit of football and basketball recruiting. So, reading your column this morning, Brian, about football recruiting and sort of how it's affected by everything else that is going on that we're spending so much time talking about this offseason. I had this question. What historically, and I would imagine that someone knows this number, I'm not sure that you necessarily do, historically probably what 50% of a recruiting class makes it at its same school to you know, end his career or graduate or move on to the NFL or what have you. What number do you think that will be going forward? If we just magically make up that it's around 50% now, what are we talking about? Probably like 20-25%. And what will that mean for high school recruiting?
It kind of depends on how you define it, because guys are going to see their careers ended by injury and stuff like that. I mean, that's kind of a fact of life in football. And, you know, Purdue's already had some guys the last couple of recruiting classes have to retire for that reason. But obviously the free transfer stuff has both made it easier for guys to find better situations, but also easier for coaches to kind of worm out of situations, you know, that they don't really, you know, want around. So the numbers are going to turn over much more dramatically than they were. And they were already, you know, turning over pretty dramatically. Hell, you can go back to like the 90s and look at some of those Purdue recruiting classes too. And you're looking at like, you know, 50%. Retention rates there, and that was you know, 20 years ago now. And now with the stigma, you know, about transferring and all that stuff kind of was torn down years before transfer reform passed. Now it's just a fact of life, and I think that you're going to see classes, maybe you keep a handful of guys from every recruiting class, and then you just surround them with transfers from other places to replace the transfers you've all lost. You'd love, you know, for there to be, you know, a core of double-digit guys from every class that you bring up through your ranks and you develop, and they provide you stability and continuity and, you know, theoretically leadership. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just don't know if that's not more of a luxury nowadays as opposed to the norm in college football. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I could see situations where entire recruiting classes, you know, here or there or wherever. It could be a situation like in basketball where you bring in four guys 1 year and then, you know, there's one guy there 4 years later for whatever reason. I could see situations now in college football where you could sign 20 guys and you could have like two dudes on senior day who were there more than a couple of years, because that's just the way this is going to go now. And I think it's going to be a real challenge for college football coaches, because there's going to be a lot of starting over every year for the programs who are really active in portal. And that's going to be pretty much everybody probably. Because you're used to bringing teams up through the ranks and not just starting over every year. And, you know, football's not a simple sport, and it's going to be a real challenge. But the people who do the best job with this, both in terms of getting the best players out of the portal but also onboarding them as effectively as possible, those are the people who are going to win in this environment now. And it's an opportunity for places like Purdue to be really good in that regard and kind of elevate themselves.
Seems like in-state recruiting becomes a little bit more important, because those guys seem like they might be more likely to stick it out for longer, perhaps, whereas somebody from you know, a different region might be more likely to transfer. I don't know. We've got about five more minutes left. I wanted to talk. Do you want to comment on that? And then I want to talk to you about Eric Hunter and basketball.
I think it's important that you have guys come in that would have natural reason to stay, provided you want to keep them. I mean, if a guy's a bad player, I think you're cool with him leaving. If a guy's a great player, you want him, obviously. But continuity perspective, from a retention perspective, if somebody came to Purdue because, you know, their family can see them play, it's an hour down the road, perhaps they grew up a Purdue fan, they have reason to want to stay. They're probably going to be less likely to depart. But I think it's just really important that in every recruiting class now, at Purdue especially, you just get those two or three guys who you know can be really good and can help you right away. The Rondell Moores, the George Karloftis, the David Bells.
Yeah.
And then you surround those guys with what you can pick up on the fly, basically. I know that sounds kind of minimalist of this whole thing, but I think that's kind of the way it's going. You got to get those couple of great players in every class. And I think you're more likely to get those guys from your natural footprint too. So I think that that really puts more of an onus on getting the guys in your state that both that, you know, would have reason to want to come. Your chances of getting them would be better, but also your chance of keeping them would be better.
Let's move on to Eric Hunter and basketball recruiting really quick. We've got 3 minutes left before the timer runs out on me on this podcast. I don't want to have to cut you off again. Don't spiral into McDonald's ice cream machine rants either, if possible.
No promises.
Eric Hunter chooses Butler. It seems like a good fit for him. Purdue needs a guard. I liked your comment and your story that, like, everybody's pinning their hopes on Ethan Morton playing point guard. Well, he's probably a starter elsewhere. So will Purdue get a guard? I mean, it, like, needs a body there. I mean, if you just look at roster makeup, it needs another player in the backcourt.
Well, I mean, there's still players out there. I mean, obviously the elephant in the room is the fact that the really high-end dudes, Tyrese Hunters, the Nigel Packs, and whatnot, are guys who are in position in this unique time in history to make money, a lot of money. And that makes things difficult for Purdue, but there's still players out there, and I'm quite certain they're going to get somebody. I can't tell you who it is, but I think it's reasonable to suggest that if, you know, Purdue had really twisted Eric Hunter's arm to come back, when I think he was interested initially in coming back, when they had all these other irons in the fire, I think that probably would have gotten done. So I'm not necessarily saying Purdue was ready to move on there, but I do think that had Purdue really twisted his arm, you know, I think maybe that gets done and you have a multi-year starter back from next season. The fact that that didn't happen, you know, suggests that, you know, Purdue is still okay with being out there in the open market and probably not panicking the way that, you know, everybody on the outside is panicking. All I can say is they'll get somebody at some point. That I'm quite certain of that. I don't know who that player is going to be.
Yeah.
If you're expecting them to go out and sign Chris Paul or somebody like that, that's not reality. I think the Nigel Pack thing was an absolute punch in the face that wouldn't have happened any other year, but this very weird, unique year.
Yeah.
But I'm quite certain they'll get somebody. And yes, Ethan Morton is your starting small forward right now, most likely. So playing him at point guard is probably not an option, nor would it be ideal anyway, because there are some defensive matchup issues with him on the ball that would be a massive, massive adjustment for him. If you ask me, or if you ask anyone, if you ask him. So that's what I got.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Thanks, Brian.
Yep. Bye.
All right. That'll do it for the podcast for this week. Thanks to our sponsors, as always. And for Brian Newbert, I'm Kyle Turgers. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.